The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Well, as you know, every single day, it seems like, and almost every talk show in America, whether it's radio or television, is constantly talking about the Federal Reserve and what they're thinking and what they're going to think and what they're going to do and what kind of impact it has on us. And so we can't talk from anybody from the Fed, but we're going to get really close today because we are pleased this morning to have with us Ms. Danielle DiMartino Booth. She spent 9 years as senior financial analyst with the Federal Reserve of Dallas and served as an advisor to our favorite Fed official, which was Dallas Federal Reserve President Mr. Richard Pfister, who just recently retired. I thought it was kind of interesting. She served on the Fed after becoming a loyal reader, after Pfister had become a loyal reader of her financial column in the Dallas Morning News, and I guess he called her and asked her to come to work.
I thought that was very impressive.
I thought that was very impressive. Danielle, are you there?
I'm right here. Yes.
You know, it sounds like one of those Hollywood stories where you know an actress was found in a California diner. And he kind of plucked you out of oblivion and threw you into a major role. But thank you, first of all, for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Sure. No, I'm happy to be here. Just a little bit of a backstory. When I left New York, when I left Wall Street, I had been at DLJ, and then we were bought out by Credit Suisse. I had signed a non-compete clause. So I effectively went into retirement at a fairly young age and said, you know what, there's no more Chinese Wall, no more compliance, no more Wall Street. I'm just going to go and write for a living. And I was quite at peace when my phone rang, and it was his secretary at the time calling on his behalf.
Well, you know, now I've never met the gentleman. We've obviously followed him avidly, both in from a business standpoint here, but also we've been doing this show for about 4 years. He seems like a really wonderful person.
You know, he absolutely is. There was no greater privilege. You know, it's certainly not in my DNA to be a bureaucrat. I'm a producer. That's how I think. But working for him was such a tremendous privilege. You know, he's not a PhD in economics. So he's no wonk by any measure. We both have our MBAs in finance, and we see the world through the prism of the financial markets. So he's very grounded, and he understands things that I think a lot of Fed officials miss.
And I agree. And what's his position now? Have you spoken with him recently? I know he's been out talking, but what's his position? I think my understanding is he doesn't feel like they need the raise. Am I correct?
He's a senior official with Barclays. So he's kind of back. He came off of Wall Street originally, started at Brown Brothers, and he also sits on the boards of Pepsi and AT&T.
Wow. Wow. So
very interesting.
He's still
too type A to be truly retired. There's no golf course every afternoon for him. None of that.
All right. So what are your thoughts? What do you think the Fed needs to be doing? Because Peggy was saying in her opening, you know, it's like a tennis match out there right now, because you've got guys like Kurt Schilacoda who's saying, no. You know, they need to hold off. And then you had the Richmond Fed, Lacker, saying yesterday that he thinks that they should stick with their 4 rate hikes for the year and just kind of stick with the program. What is your thought?
Well, you know, with all due deference to how much I enjoyed listening to Richard Pfister make speeches over the years, I think that we might be in a period of Fed speak overload, where it's actually fomenting more uncertainty for the markets. It's doing worse than it is good because there is so much confusion that's introduced by so many disparate views coming out of different Fed regional presidents and, for that matter, people on the board in Washington.
Absolutely. In fact, it seems like almost after every meeting, they come trotting out and, you know, the guys that didn't get it their way start complaining, and the guys that got it their way, you know, say, see, we're doing exactly what we should be doing. Do you think that I don't know how close you were to economics, so I don't know if I'm asking a question that you can answer, but do you have an opinion on whether or not rates should go up from what you saw working with the Fed?
Well, I had a very strong opinion about rates about 2 years ago. And unfortunately, then Fisher's voice and my voice were not heard. You may recall a few years ago there was a lot of dithering about whether or not the Fed should taper its purchases when it was still doing $85 billion a month in purchases during that final round of QE. And at the time, we were arguing that we shouldn't be talking about the taper, but rather the economy was relatively strong enough to withstand a rate hike. And if you look at the 19 measures that Yellen follows the most closely, she actually has come up with a labor market conditions index because she doesn't want to follow just the headline non-farm payroll or the headline unemployment rate. But if you looked at those 19 indicators in the aggregate, the index was flashing at its most, at its strongest several years ago, and we knew that. So why she chose December to hike rates is truly mystifying to me, because it went against the grain of true economics and a true Keynesian, which she is, with manufacturing having been in a contraction for 4 months running. So I think the Fed has backed themselves into an extremely tight corner at this juncture because it's not appropriate to raise rates by their measures.
Now, you were talking about some of the measurements that she's looking at, and you brought up something in an article that I think you just wrote called "Are American Workers Playing Hard to Get?" Something called the quits rate. Now, I'll be honest with you. I've been in this business for 40 years. I've never heard of the quits rate. What exactly is that?
Well, down here in Texas, we like to call it the take this job and shove it rate.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I've heard that before.
Well, there you go. It is how confident workers feel about leaving a job without having another one already secured. So if people feel that they can quit their job and quickly get another job, then that's a good sign that the economy is strengthening because people sense momentum. One of my favorite economists, I'll tell you what he told me, and this is about some of the surveys that they take of people in the workforce. He said, look, Danielle, the average American can't tell you how the economy is doing. They're not supposed to be able to, but they can tell you if they have a job, and they can tell you if their income is rising or falling. And that's the truth. And a lot of that is reflected in the quits rate.
So as she looks at the figures right now, do you think she's comfortable with the way things are? Because I think on her last big speech, which I guess was last week, she was really seemed to be more focused on Europe and saying, you know what, that Europe seems to be an issue. They seem to be struggling over there, and that may impact our decision, or at least that's what I got out of it. Do you think she's comfortable with the way things are here in the United States?
Well, I think the data that we got out this morning on retail sales, so we've had a third disappointing month in a row in the March figures.
Right.
Every time we get a report like that, it probably gives her more and more pause. To your point, she mentioned the global environment. She mentioned the dollar, things that aren't typical areas of concentration for chairman of the Fed, right? That's something that the Treasury usually speaks to. So she's extremely aware that whatever happens here is going to affect what happens over there and that there could be boomerang effects for the U.S. economy. But what most people don't quite appreciate who are extremely bullish on the outlook is how long this recovery has been, how long in the tooth it is.
Right. Yeah, in fact, I think we're 1 month away from 7 years, I think, which would make it the second longest recovery, I believe, in the history of the markets, at least. So,
as far as the stock market goes, absolutely. If we close this month, the only other point of comparison we have is March of 2000.
Yeah, that's right. And so it has been a pretty phenomenal recovery. The Fed has played a major role in it. But one of the things that's been created out of this is a tremendous amount of debt. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that on the other side of the break, because I never really thought growing up that I would see something called $19 trillion in debt. So I'd like to get your opinion on that when we come back. Folks, we're having a great show today with Danielle DiMartino Booth. Stay with us. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we bring you the wisdom of Wall Street each and every day. Back in a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've got Danielle DiMartino Booth with us. Danielle spent 9 years as senior financial analyst with the Federal Reserve of Dallas and served as an advisor on monetary policy to Dallas Federal Reserve President Richard Fisher. So we are talking about what's going on here and just And I think I'll just ask one more question on rates and things, or on the way things are responding on Wall Street before I get onto the debt. Danielle, it just amazes me, as I was saying just a few seconds ago, I was watching this morning as the retail sales came out, and they came out down 0.3%, anticipation was up 0.1%. So obviously that's negative news to the economy. So what happens? Futures in the market go up because they're interpreting it, of course, that, oh, that means she can't raise rates, and that means that, who knows, maybe we're lucky if we stay lousy long enough, they'll give us more free money. Does this bother you at all?
You know, the whole bad is good thing never sat well with me. And, again, given what we were talking about before the break, how long in the tooth the current recovery is, at some point, bad is good is not going to work anymore. And we're going to land ourselves in recession, and the markets won't care what the Fed is able to do.
Yeah, absolutely. We can't play this game forever. And the other game that it just baffles me, and I talked about it just before the break. Growing up, I guess, you know, I'm sure I heard the word billion. I grew up in less than a modest environment, so I, you know, maybe million was the only thing that I heard of the millionaire, because it used to be an old show like that. But I never would have heard the word trillion. Probably didn't even think the word even existed, and yet here we are faced today with over $19 trillion of debt, and it has really skyrocketed in the last 8 years or so during President Obama. Does this concern you? Does this concern the Fed? I mean, all the people that you know, is anybody concerned about this out there?
Well, I certainly am concerned about it. In fact, I'm so concerned about it, that's the subject of my weekly this week. And the title is, Has the Fed Bankrupted the Nation? And it's all about debt. And the $19 trillion is just a portion of the $64.5 trillion in debt that this country has racked up, if you add it all up.
Wow. Now, okay, now you mentioned your weekly. Can you? I think we need to have a little commercial here. How can people get a hold of you? How can they follow you? Can they subscribe to you? I truly have no idea, so I'm asking for myself.
Yes, you can go online and subscribe for free. I'm at www.demartinobooth.com, or if it's easier, just Google Money Strong. That's the name of my firm, and you can sign up for a subscription right there online. But let's get back to debt.
Yeah, let's get back to debt. How are we going to pay it off? In fact, you know, one of the interesting thing was, is we, you know, we've been doing this show now for, I guess, about four and a half years, and it was during the QE period, and we were, during that whole period of time, we would talk to economists and things like that, and some very prominent ones, and we would ask, how are they going to get out of this? This is when Bernanke was still running it, and they said, well, we have no idea. We've actually never done this before. Has anybody thought about how we're going to get out of this? I mean, how we're going to unwind all this debt? How are we going to unwind all this financial engineering that we've done?
Well, you know, it's funny because economists would argue that we're going to inflate our way out of the debt.
Right.
But if you listen to Lacey Hunt and Van Huysington out of Austin, they will give you a quick education in deflation. And as long as the debt itself is growing, then the weight of servicing that debt grows as a factor of time. So you find yourself chasing your tail, incapable of inflating your way out of the debt.
Yeah, you know, in fact, it's interesting you mentioned Lacey, because he's absolutely one of my favorite guests to have on. But, you know, he's like he's like a lone prophet out there. I mean, kind of like you were, because I think you sounded the early warning signs of the housing bubble back in 2000. I'm sure nobody was listening to you back then. And he's saying the same thing. Do you think that there's a probability that we will have deflation instead of inflation?
Well, I think that that's what the Fed has been so mightily fighting for as long as it has, because the ghosts of the Great Depression haunt the Fed so much. They've got all kinds of things that they can deploy to fight inflation. Deflation's a different story. So I think that that's where they've had the greatest fear. But, you know, I'll take a step back, though, and say that there is some deflation that is good for us, and that's when we see the prices of certain things fall. But at this juncture, I would venture that my retired mother no longer cares about the fact that she can go into Sam's and get a $600 flat-screen TV. She would prefer that the cost of necessities would quit going up. And, again, that gets us to some of the measurement flaws in the inflation metrics that we do follow.
Okay, I'll tell you what, Peggy, I will let you ask. Peggy and I both have a question for you, but I'm a ladies first.
Well, you mentioned Ben Bernanke, and, you know, Ben Bernanke recently, or within the last maybe 6 months or so, he came out and he said that the Fed needs to add those negative rates into the toolbox and have that in the toolbox. Do you ever see the negative rates coming to pass, Danielle?
You know, I think there's a certain irony here, right? Because you look overseas at Europe, and maybe there were only two money market funds that had to pull up the gates when certain countries in Europe implemented them. And that's simply not the way that our financial system infrastructure is. There's a certain irony here, and listeners, their eyeballs will roll back into their head. But when the Fed raised interest rates in December, it did so with the assistance of the money market fund industry. I'll leave the mechanics at that, but I'll say this. If we were to implement negative interest rates in this country, you would essentially be telling all the money market funds who are helping you deploy monetary policy where they can put their assistance by putting them out of business. I just don't think it's feasible. This is one of the few times that I would actually, you know, cheer on the lobbyists, because it's simply not the American way to have negative interest rates, not the way our financial system is structured.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, because none of us want it. In fact, I have a quick question. Is there any concern by the powers that be, the people that run all these policies, fiscal and monetary policies, about the plight of the average consumer or the average baby boomer who is getting ready to retire in massive quantities, as you know? 10,000 people a day turn 65, and then some of them don't require at that point, but a lot of baby boomers are going to retire over the next 20 years, and they're looking at incredibly low rates that were even unimaginable when they started out their working careers years ago.
You know, it wasn't but 10 years ago, because I had somebody challenge me recently by saying, gee, I sure do miss the days that my grandmother could go into her local community bank and get a 5-year jumbo CD with a 5% rate. And somebody tweeted me back, oh, great, we want to go back to the days of hyperinflation. Well, I actually looked back at the data, and we're talking about 2005 here. So it's not that long ago that savings was not criminalized. And
right.
If you think about the Fed incentivizing the average baby boomer to load up on high-yield bonds and load up on dividend-paying stocks, you have to wonder what's going to happen when the markets do set back, and they will set back. You cannot repeal the laws of nature, so if it is two more years, that will really hurt baby boomers when the average baby boomer is 72 and their 401k gets hit once again. And again, they can't get rational yields for their cash.
Yeah, rational yields, that's a good way to put it. I've never heard that before, but it is a major concern to many, many baby boomers out there. I tell you, would you mind staying over for just one or two more questions? Do you have the time to do that?
Absolutely,
oh, that's great.
Sure.
Oh, really, because we're having a great show, and we're having a good time here, folks. Hope you'll stay with us. We'll be back in just a few moments. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we bring you the wisdom of Wall Street each and every day. We'll all be back in just a minute.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed the show as much as I have, folks, as I've had a great time. We have had a wonderful time this morning with Danielle DiMartino Booth, former senior financial analyst with the Federal Reserve of Dallas. And this is a lady who knows so much. And, you know, I kept you on just because I want to ask you just a couple of questions. One is, there's been a lot of concern. Charlie Munger talked about this morning about the problem with the financial system. And I know that you saw the housing bubble before anybody else did. Is there anything that you're looking at right now that really concerns you, that the average investor, or maybe something that the average investor needs to pay attention to? Because Mr. Munger made a statement in his speech this week. He said, the big bust hurt us more than the big booms help us. And as you know, the baby boomers went through two busts. They went through the technology bubble that took place at the end of the last century, and then they got hit again in 2008 and 2009. I personally, from what I know, I don't think many of them could stand a third one. Is there anything out there that you see that could give us a real issue going forward?
Well, you just hit the nail. You really did, Mike. And I'll take you back to another discussion that I had with Charlie Munger years ago when I was out in Omaha. And he and I discussed the efficient frontier, which is the way that portfolios are allocated so that you've got a diversified portfolio in the event of market disruptions. And he and I talked about busts. And during the bust, the biggest issue is, especially when the Fed is holding rates at artificially low levels, is that asset classes tend to become perfectly correlated. In other words, there's no place to hide. And my greatest concern is that the pension system in this country, as well as the average 401k, has been forced to put all of their funds into inappropriate investments to try and offset what they're not getting in their savings. And right. I truly worry about our government's capability to address the next bust. Because you're not talking about baby boomers with 10 or 15 years of the ability to work in front of them. You're truly talking about people who need to retire, people in their mid-70s at that point, and that will be a huge problem, I think, for our country.
Wow. And I agree with you. The other thing that really concerns me is the percentage of entitlement dollars that go out of our federal budget, which has gotten to a level that that is amazing. Does that concern you at all?
Well, if you follow the logic of what I just said, that's going to put the onus more on Social Security to make up for what people lose in their personal retirement savings. So absolutely it concerns me. Look, one of the greatest sins of central banking over the past 30 years has been that it's allowed Congress to do a whole lot of nothing. The 2015 fiscal year interest expense for the United States of America was 1.8%. It's really easy to put off difficult decisions about entitlement reforms when you're borrowing for basically nothing.
Yeah, you know, when you write your next book, Danielle, why don't we call it Kicking the Can Down the Road or something?
They're
really, a really bad stub toe that way because the can's really heavy.
Yeah, they seem really, really good at that. Anyway, thank you so much for being with us today. It has been an honor to have you, and thank you for sharing. We hope you'll come back.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.